If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk, TNT.
Good evening and welcome to State of the Nation. For Brian Hesher McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. We're coming to you live from Central Texas and Central New York. Check us out on the web at tntradio.live. Brian, welcome to State of the Nation.
Good to be here with you, Timothy. Having a good day. How about you?
It's been a great day. Now, we're going to play a little game here. And just to verify, you and I did not coordinate this beforehand.
Not at all.
We're going to play a little game I like to call, Who Am I? I went to a Sheetz and no one came up to say hello to me. That's your first hint. Your second hint, I went to a Wawa and ordered a milkshake and no one came up to say hello to me.
Are you Joe Biden or Kamala Harris?
Joe Biden, you got a new one.
Right.
Donald Trump goes to a bodega in Harlem where he's supposed to be a racist and everybody hates him because he's a racist. And they're singing the national anthem. Joe Biden supporters are burning the American flag and chanting death to America. The people up in Harlem at the bodega, they're yelling, we love Trump and Trump 24 in 4 more years. And the people yelling for Joe Biden don't exist. Compare and contrast.
Compare and contrast games are fun with these two candidates, aren't they? I remember when they went down to the southern border, we got to play the same game. Very interesting to see the response. Because what did we see when Biden went down there? We saw a long caravan of big Texas trucks. We got a lot of big truck guys here and gals with Trump flags and F Joe Biden stickers on their rear windows.
I have an FJB edition vehicle. And it's right there on the side. You know how they have the Denali version or the Eddie Bauer? I'll send you a picture. Mine is the FJB edition.
I gift
friends with that. So maybe if you play your cards right.
I'll take one. That might look good on the back of the Pontiac.
So here's the thing. It's just mind-boggling how these never Trump losers can say, oh, Donald Trump's not presidential. It's like, get over yourself. This man had peace in the Middle East. He had his energy independent. He had the best economy in generations. He had the best employment numbers ever for blacks, Hispanics, and other minorities. Second best for women after World War II. And yet these people are somehow, they think that Joe Biden falling off his bike, eating an ice cream cone is presidential.
It's a stark comparison. I'll give you all those points, but I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, there's a lot of people out there right now saying, all right, we'll give him another shot, but this time we don't want 42 scumbags being put on his cabinet. So, and we don't want any more, WHO interference, CDC interference, and we'd like to see a whole bunch of pardons to start with Julian Assange. So, you know, and a condemnation of Pfizer and Moderna. So maybe we could start there. A little advice to the Trump campaign.
Point taken and seconded. All in favor, say aye. I believe aye. It's unanimous. I was just having this conversation with a friend last night. He said Donald Trump tried to be conciliatory. That's why he won the election when he said to Hillary, when she said, I'd hate to have you as the chief law enforcement officer. And without missing a beat, he said, yeah, because you'd be in jail. That's the moment that he won the election. But then what did we get? Oh, these are nice people. I'd hate to see them get hurt. He was conciliatory. They painted his inaugural address, which I think is one of the best in history, as somehow dark and foreboding. He was a nice guy. Well, guess what? You don't get nice guy Trump this time around. I think you're exactly correct as to what we are going to see.
Yeah, definitely. And again, another good comparison there. Compare that speech that you just referenced by Trump to the blood red rant of Joe Biden a couple of years later. Pretty big difference.
A production worthy of Lena Wertmüller, the Nazi propagandist that What was the Triumph of Will? Wasn't that her movie about the Nuremberg rallies?
Yep.
And, you know, we'll leave that right there. Did you know there are many ways you can watch or listen to TNT? Why not stream us directly from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device? Or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on X, YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on today's News Talk TNT.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, cuz here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, Brian, why was your day so great? What tickled your fancy today?
Oh, you know, I think I'm just sort of accepting this week, today in particular, feeling a little bit of acceptance about where we're at politically and geopolitically. And, you know, just feeling pretty good about it. It's a beautiful day outside, you know. I really can't complain. This is pretty nice as far as declines of empires go.
I am happy to hear that, because it sounds like you pride yourself away from the doom scroll, which we recommend everyone do. Tune into TNT for your news and stay away from the doom scroll. It's bad. Yeah. Very bad.
That's exactly what I did. I mean, I wake up and I have to do it. I have, you know, I'm addicted to my doom scroll.
Sure, doom scroll and donuts. We know. Yeah.
Got a little bit in with the donut. But, you know, after that, set it down, started working on the mechanics of the show today, and just enjoyed the afternoon with the pets and the wifey. And, you know, I can't complain, you know. But then I tune into the Patrick Henningsen show, and I listen to him and George Papadopoulos talking about, you know, the state of our nation, the state of our world. And, man, it just gets me fired up to do what we're doing right here, Timothy.
Oh, yeah, we're really lucky. As long as you don't get the eye twitch going, like.
right.
Inspector Clouseau used to initiate, yes, in Pink Panther movies. We're doing good. Stop. As long as your eye's not twitching, you're good.
Right. Well, you know, you stop at the 1,000-yard stare and then you don't get to the eye twitch phase there, as Inspector Clouseau failed to do.
There you go. Yeah, it's you know, I almost felt sorry for his superior, almost, but not quite. I just can't think that I just can't get over how people can honestly believe that Joe Biden is popular, that he's presidential, that he's doing right by the country, that he's a great president. And yet, Brian, there are people out there that believe it, but I just can't wrap my head around it. Just like I can't put myself in the shoes of a pedophile and look at a child as being sexually attractive. I can't look at Joe Biden and see a leader.
Yeah, and I'm afraid that appears to be the case on largely both sides of the aisle all across Capitol Hill. We're learning this week yet again that they do not care about us. They, in fact, hate us. They want to surveil us. They want to label us, and they want to destroy our economy and crap all over our U.S. Constitution and our inalienable rights. So,
When you have the head of a, we'll call NPR a major news organization, say that the First Amendment is our greatest challenge, free speech is our greatest challenge, freedom of the press is our greatest challenge. Woman, you are the press. You don't want freedom? How could the First Amendment be a challenge, Brian? I don't get how these people think.
Well, they don't want us to have a constitutional republic. Let's just face it. They're not interested in that. They're trying to find ways to subvert it happily and merrily and openly now, and, you know, promoting that in our colleges. It's just, you know, more predictive programming, getting people used to the idea of the country imploding and that being a good thing in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. And it's, I have been saying for decades now that we should not be funding NPR. Okay, NPR is not an honest news broker, has not been since the McNeil-Lehrer News Hour went away. Even Judy Woodruff, she was okay for a while, but then even she, you know, they made her go hard left at the end. Sesame Street can pay for itself. I can't go into a Toys R Us without seeing Elmo and Cookie Monster and Bert and Ernie. They're making a lot of merch off that licensing. And yeah. I think it's time for NPR to grow up, put on its big boy, big girl pants, and pay its own way.
Yeah, I think they've earned it at this point. They've proven themselves to be rank propagandists using our tax dollars to propagandize to us. So we're on to the gig here.
We certainly are. And also on to the gig is the founder of Students for Trump and the executive director of Radical Alert, Ryan Fournier. You can find him on X and Insta at Ryan A. Fournier. That's F-O-R-N-I-E-R. Ryan, welcome to State of the Nation.
It's great to be here. I'm glad to be here. I've heard so many good things about you, and I just had to meet you face to face.
Well, we're happy to have you, and we hope to have you back many times. We've been talking about how inconceivable it is that someone looks at Joe Biden and sees a president, and someone looks at Donald Trump and doesn't see a president. What do you think, Ryan?
I mean, my thing is we led through peace through strength. That's the one key thing that people need to take away. There was a Rush Limbaugh interview in 2020 before he ended his show. And he said to Rush Limbaugh, and he was talking about Iran. And he said to Iran, if you F around, you will find out and we will do things to you that has never been done before. Iran never struck Israel at that point in time. Through the 4 years, Iran never struck Israel. And then also the same thing with Putin. One conversation I had with the president, which is very important to sort of underline, I had a dinner with him last year, and he said to me, he said that he had an off-the-record call with Putin. And he told Putin, if you invade Ukraine, we will, we know the coordinates to the Kremlin, your penthouse in the Kremlin. The last thing that you and your hookers will see is the roof being blown off in the night sky and missiles coming down. He told me that right to my face. This is a guy who you want in office because he's uncalculated in a way where our enemies know maybe in, you know, sort of a sense that he may do whatever he can do as a president, but you don't know what he's going to do. And that's very, very important from a president. From Joe Biden, we get a vegetable. We get, you know, 20 to 30 people running the White House. This is not a proficient way to do it. Not at all.
Yeah, and there's so much money going to Ukraine, too. We've got all these skirmishes now, and we're looking at, you know, over $100 billion spent. And what we see is a whole lot of death and zero military evidence of, you know, any sort of progress. And in fact, if one is, you know, savvy enough to be looking at independent reports on Telegram and other places, you can see it, you know, abject horror happening out there. And it's like, well, our government just wants to send more money, while our country's being invaded, not just at the southern border, but at the beaches, the airports, the northern border, pretty much, you know, anywhere as the crow flies or the Boeing flies. Just thinking about the amount of money going into foreign border skirmishes while ours is left wide open. Many people are saying, and I'm one of them, that they're setting us up for a black swan event, and that even in the case of a Trump victory, he may end up getting handed, you know, let's face it, somebody crapped in the punch bowl.
No, I mean, I know what you mean. I mean, you look at the border. I mean, we've reached historic levels. We're talking millions of people from the start of this year to now. We're looking at 4 million already have crossed the border. 4+ million. That should concern people because we do not know where they came from. There's no records. There's nothing like that. You know, from these third world countries, you know, you talk about Venezuela, Brazil, there's no records. So how do you, you know, sort of handle that? You know, DHS has no capabilities whatsoever. They're underfunded. And we've tried to find a way to do this under Trump, and we had them funded. But at this point in time, there is no funding for DHS to handle these type of problems whatsoever. And this is a serious issue that I want to let the American people know that I've been notified of. We are on an imminent threat line, is what they call it. They call it a tier 5 threat line from the FBI. We have a potential terrorist attack that will happen, is what the FBI is saying. You may have, you know, sort of saw the alerts. I get sort of these DHS emails. We are in a position right now where a terrorist strike could happen any day of the week, and we have no capabilities to.
You're absolutely right. We have zero capability to stop it. And I think we're all afraid that they're going to do to Donald Trump what they did to George Bush. He's going to get into office, and then immediately, boom, all of a sudden, he's going to be handed this big crisis to deal with, to derail what he wants to do in terms of reducing the size of our government.
Ryan, we're going to have to leave it there.
We're out of time, but I want to thank you so much. Can't wait to have you back, folks. Go to Ryan A. Fournier on X, subscribe to his feed on Instagram. It's great information. You're going to get it right from the horse's mouth many times. Ryan, thanks for coming on State of the Nation.
Thank you, sir. You have a blessed rest of your day.
You too. We've got more State of the Nation right after these headlines from today's News Talk TNT.
Los Angeles has been described as a suburb looking for a city. Join me as we explore LA's neighborhoods and the local restaurants, cafes, and bars that are an integral part of these vibrant and diverse communities.
Today we are going to cook a small steak for people who are ready. Quite hungry.
Very, very simple. A couple squeezes of lemon in there.
Since you're adding the meat, and you can also do it with tofu options as well for the vegetarians.
Olive oil. So now we're gonna season it up. Fresh grind black pepper. Really hot and busy in here.
I'm gonna go ahead and make some butter toast.
Olive oil.
Ah, smells, really smells good.
Grab our shiitake mushrooms.
Season with salt a little bit.
Boy, it's getting hot in the kitchen. Another drink of my beer. Ah, that's the best part of cooking.
And we are ready to put our plate together.
Add the mussels right around the rim. See, we have really nice colors, nice piece of fish.
You just need to add a little bit of powdered sugar.
And I will just put a little bit of reduction glaze over the top.
When you add a pesto like this onto a braised meat, the smells that just come up are just wonderful. Take it from me. Got a good thing going here.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, globalism, stakeholder capitalism, international states of emergency, international censorship, all leading towards a world where the ideals and inalienable rights laid out in the Magna Carta, the U.S. Constitution, Some may say based in part on the political formations of the Iroquois, the Shawnee, the Cherokee, and other political formations that separated military and civil leadership while guarding personal freedoms. Are these things at risk? We think so. The machinery of the World Economic Forum and those that place them on the grand chessboard want a global citizenry where everyone has a digital ID, central banking digital currency instead of cash, and maybe even universal basic income, and all orchestrated and built around a social credit system, Chinese style, which is currently being erected here in the United States and elsewhere. They also appear to be toying with our global financial interests here and abroad, nudging towards a black swan, a financial black swan event potentially that could drive us into that WEF quote-unquote utopia. I think it's a dystopia. Joining us now is an author, a columnist, the founder of the National Post, a historian, a businessman, and a lord. His latest book is called The Political and Strategic History of the World, Volume 1. Lord Conrad Black, welcome to State of the Nation. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thank you for inviting me on.
We're very happy you were able to join us. You know, I watched your interview with Joseph Arthur, one of our friends and colleagues, this last weekend, yeah. And I learned so much about you. And I'm eager to get your book and read it. And even though I don't have it yet, I'm already eager for a volume two. So we're really pleased to have you on the show.
Written. Volume two is three quarters written now.
All right. Okay. Well, hopefully I can get through volume one before you put volume two out so I can jump right in there. But thanks for joining us. So by my intro, my opening statement there, you probably notice I don't really much care for the idea of global government. What are your thoughts on the trajectory of global governance and geopolitics right now?
Yeah, well, it is certainly something to be concerned with. I attended the World Economic Forum at Davos for 20 years, and while the Cold War was still on, it was not a particularly offensive organization. It was a good place to go and meet people in the same activity you were in, and I succeeded the late Bob Maxwell as the head of the media group, so I found it quite useful, but just because my little section of it gave me an opportunity to meet at no inconvenience to myself the number of these people, and I got a fair amount of business done at different times. But once the Cold War was over, they threw down the mask. Once they didn't have to fear the Russians in Europe anymore, and at least they knew the Russians were a threat to them. The pre-Gorbachev Russians, at least. They then devised the idea that first of all we must have an ironclad unity within Europe. And if you plied them with drink, as I did sometimes in the social parts of the meetings, they would candidly tell me and others that they felt that Europe had ruled the world prior to the First World War, made some terrible mistakes, brought on the two world wars, brought on communism and fascism and Nazism, but now And they had to bring in the Americans to keep the Russians out. But now that the Soviet Union had collapsed, they could pretty much dispense with the Americans, and they would all stand on each other's shoulders and rule the world again. Not as completely as they had 100 years ago, but be a great power in the world, you see. And it was a pipe dream. It was nonsense. And I was sitting there with our business in England, receiving these outrageous directives from Brussels, from the European EC, the European Economic Community, and then the European Union, so-called, and regulating us right down to the last millimeter, which I told our people to ignore because the British government was not going to indict us for ignoring stupid regulations. But let me be clear. I think the idea that all these European countries are cooperating and no longer making war on each other is a splendid thing. The idea of good relations among the Europeans is a wonderful thing, but the idea that this little clack in Brussels is going to rule Europe and rule it as a unitary state, where the commissioners, once confirmed, have absolute authority, and the so-called Parliament of Europe is just a talking shop, and no one is answerable to them. This is nonsense. It's not going to fly. And none of the serious, by which I mean they're all serious, but the larger European countries, none of them would subscribe to that. The Spanish wouldn't, the Polish wouldn't, the Italians wouldn't, even the Germans, who are the most influential and are accustomed to regimentation, wouldn't. Britain has left, and while they haven't made the most of having left, they will, they're right to leave. They have much more in common with the United States and the senior Commonwealth, with Australia and Canada and so on, than they do with the Europeans, so they naturally want good relations with the Europeans. So I would say that the idea of a monochrome bureaucratic centrally governed world pursuing social democratic and ultra regulatory goals. Not the abolition of free speech. They're not totalitarians, but this awful deadening, bureaucratized eradication of any distinctions between countries and groups, all in the name of definition of social justice, contrived by completely unrepresentative and unworldly people in the Netherlands and Belgium, who are incidentally enacting another fantasy of their own to get their revenge for centuries of having been, as they consider, condescended to by the French and the Germans and the British. That is nonsense, but it's run out of steam, and nobody approves it. I agree with you in your opposition to it, but I don't think it is at this point gaining ground. They, you know, Trump is leading in the polls in your country. The Conservatives are leading in Canada. The National Front is leading in France. The Christian Democrats and the Alternative Party are leading in Germany. There's already the most conservative government in Italy they've had since the war. And the public still determines these things, and the public is moving in the direction that if I may take liberties, you and I would wish, and away from this World Economic Forum view, which they got completely out of control and lost all perspective and thought they had some talent and vocation to express right. The future of the world, and they didn't.
Right. Okay. We have a headline we're going to take, but to your point, I noticed in Japan there was a giant protest against the World Economic Forum just recently, and of course our media didn't cover it here, but I do see that as well, and that does bring a little bit of hope to people that are concerned about the goals of globalism. Please hold the line. We'll take a headline. We'll pick up right there. This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk TNT.
Great news.
The news.
We have news.
Great news.
Great news.
Great news, my friends.
Yeah. Listen.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, stated that a resolution granting the Palestinian Authority full UN membership would not advance a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson has affirmed his commitment to bringing a series of foreign aid bills to a vote in the U.S. House of Representatives, which will include funding for Ukraine and Israel. These votes are scheduled for Saturday evening following considerable discussions and feedback from fellow legislators.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Our guest is Lord Conrad Black. Now, sir, I'm glad to hear, you know, that you think that, you know, people are aware of what's going on and that there is a great resistance in the human spirit internationally against these sort of things. Are you concerned at all about, I mentioned potential black swan events, financial meltdowns? Are you concerned about the way markets seem to be happening right now? I know you're a bit of a financial whiz. So what's your take on the financial threat vectors right now? And are they going to destroy our economy with what they're doing?
Well, I there are reasons for concern. I mean, we have to start from the fact that our currencies no longer have any value other than in relation to each other. They're not fixed to anything solid. Now, I don't think we could go back to the gold standard. The money supply is vastly greater than it was when the gold standard was abandoned in the early 30s. But effectively, all our currencies are losing ground, and inflation is relentless, this gets quite complicated. But if you compare, for example, in the works of Dr. Johnson and of Charles Dickens, a century apart, 18th, 19th century, prices in Britain hadn't changed. A quart of milk cost the same thing. They didn't have inflation. They had booms and busts and economic cycles, but the value of things remained the same. And we're now in an era where we have constant inflation at varying rates, And the currencies of the world are like a bunch of mountain climbers tied together, and one falls down and pulls the rest down a bit, and then they stabilize and another one falls. But we're all coming down together. And eventually, and I don't know how eventual it'll be, but you know, these sovereign governments control their own money supplies, so you can drag these things out for quite a while. But there are the possibilities for real financial mismanagement here. Now, on the other side, it must be said, and we should all take some heart in this, that the percentage of the population of the world that is by a uniform standard poor, poverty, has declined from more than 50% 60 years ago to 12% now. So as long as we carry on, the productivity of the world's workforce does create wealth. It may not always be distributed as equitably as people would like, but it does create wealth. And in India, which is a largely dysfunctional country, and in China, which is a totalitarian country, both those countries, because they're dedicated to economic growth, are pulling millions of people out of poverty every year. So there is progress. There's a lot, you know, to be confident of. And on the question of the for simplicity's sake, the Davos view of things, people do vote with their pocketbooks. They will not stand for these insane measures to reduce the use of oil at great cost to themselves, when we don't know anything about whether human activity is causing climate change, and the climate change we are getting is not outside normal historic cycles. So we're in effect, the environmental movement was taken over by the far left after their defeat in the Cold War, and was used as a battering ram to attack capitalism from a new angle, and in the preposterous grounds of saving the universe, which is not in fact what they're doing. So I think economically there is always a vulnerability to a crash. I think the level of borrowing is high, and that makes it dangerous, because if you get a crack, it could gather speed and velocity very quickly. And the ability of the central bankers and the finance or treasury ministers of the governments of the main countries to use the traditional method of getting out of this just by spending is getting steadily reduced, because we've been playing that card now for 70 years.
I note that with particularity your description of the EU, and it reminds me of the person who thought that the world was held up by a turtle. And it's like, well, what's holding up the turtle? A turtle. It's turtles all the way down. And that's what we seem to have in Brussels. It's just bureaucrats all the way down. Who died and left these people in charge? I feel like a 2-year-old yelling, "You are not the boss of me." Between the WHO, well, the UN, the EU, the WEF.
You have more moral stature than a 2-year-old saying that. But of course, you're right. I mean, in the case of Britain, I mean, as you kindly mentioned at the intro, I am a member of the British Parliament. And in Britain, before I lived there, the then Prime Minister, Edward Heath, voted, or he had a referendum, which the British public approved, entering the common market. They were happy to enter a common market. Then the powers in Brussels determined that they were advancing to a next stage, seeking, I quote, an ever closer union. We were going to have one unitary government for all of the member states of what had been the common market, directed from Brussels, with a parliament in Strasbourg with no power. And Britain never voted for that. And finally, they just couldn't take it anymore. I mean, the French and the Italians generally don't take government that seriously, unless they've got a great leader like General de Gaulle or something. They think the government's just a bloody nuisance anyway, and the hell with it. We're not going to pay any attention to what they say anyhow. The Germans, as I said, are accustomed to regimentation, and they have great influence within Europe. But the British like to be law-abiding, but they like the laws to be democratically approved and sensible. And they weren't getting that. And that's the real reason they left. It was the democracy gap. and much more than the concerns about immigration. I mean, the fact is England does need more Polish plumbers. We probably all do. I mean, it's not easy getting a plumber in some of the places where I live. But we have the natural instincts of the West on our side here. People want democracy, and they want sensible legislation. They want accountability from the office holders, the governing office holders, and they want some power to revoke and change the government. You don't get that in Europe. So when I owned one of the big newspapers in Great Britain, we advocated a two-tier Europe, a common market for all of the countries, and those who wanted to pool jurisdictions politically. I mean, let's remember, most of these European countries, the institutions they're operating under, have been devised since World War II. And I mean, I'm not that old, but when I was born, Germany, Italy, France, they were all dictatorships and not well disposed to the Anglo-Americans. But all of that has changed. But in those countries that really want to coalesce jurisdictionally are free to do it. But that's what we should have. So I think there are lots of causes for concern. But I'm not a pessimist about any of them, because I think we've turned the corner, and the various jurisdictions are showing that they're not going to have this level of regimentation and this level of taxation. I think you'll see that to some extent in your elections in November, certainly in our elections in Canada next year. And I mean, the polls show you'll see it in the next elections in Germany and France as well.
Yes. Yes, sir. We're just about out of time here, Lord Black. I want to make sure and shout your book out one more time, The Political and Strategic History of the World, Volume 1. That is the newest book. Get on over to Amazon or wherever you find good books and get yourself a copy. Lord Conrad Black, thank you so much for joining us. Anything you want to throw out there on the way out?
Yeah, I know that sounds like an absurdly pretentious title for a book, but as a good index, the chapters are very clear about each phase going through. So if you want to read about Alexander the Great or Julius Caesar or Augustus or whomever you wish, you can get it. And it is there. It's not as pretentious as it sounds. I wrote it to make history more accessible to people without being glib, but not being just chronological and boring. It is. For the most part, a readable book. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And we're very much looking forward to reading the book and having you back on the program. Appreciate your insight and experience. Thank you. That's Lord Conrad Black with us right here on State of the Nation. Stay tuned. We got Roger Stone coming up next right here on TNT.
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most. To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
See, Smokey thinks I'm funny.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McLean on today's News Talk, TNT.
It's my great pleasure to welcome back to State of the Nation political strategist and lobbyist, Roger Stone. Roger has advised presidents from Nixon to Trump and advocated for common sense legislation to make the lives of everyday Americans much better. Roger, welcome back to State of the Nation.
I'm delighted to be back with you. One minor correction. I have not worked as a lobbyist in well over 30 years. So okay, it's in old biographies, but now I was always interested in politics, not particularly interested in government. So that's the only part that I needed to fix.
Well, I think we all share that sentiment. That's why I've worked on campaigns since I was 8 years old, but I've never held more than a local office. I've never sought higher office for that exact same reason. We were just speaking with Lord Conrad Black, who said to say hello to you, and he called you a great American.
Conrad Black, he's a great patriot. He's written the definitive biography on Richard Nixon. His book on Nixon is incredibly balanced and incredibly accurate, but he recognizes the perseverance and the resilience of Richard Nixon, and he understands his great accomplishments, strategic arms limitation agreement with the Soviets, ending the Vietnam War, desegregating the public schools, launching the war on cancer, federal revenue sharing to get federal tax dollars back to our local communities, saving Israel unilaterally in the 1973 Yom Kippur War over the objections of Henry Kissinger and his own national security apparatus. Of course, ending the Vietnam War, the 18-year-old vote, doing away with the military draft. He was a very successful president. Conrad Black, I think, documents all of that.
You know, it seems as though our great Republican presidents have all faced adversity, had to show resilience, overcome obstacles. I'm thinking of Richard Nixon losing to Jack Kennedy in a very questionable election in 1960, Ronald Reagan, of course, losing to Gerald Ford in 1976. And Donald Trump now is period in the wilderness. He's still writing his own biography, though, isn't he?
He really is. But in a way, of course, Trump breaks the mold of all politics that we've ever seen in so many ways. First of all, no president of the United States has been elected without being a congressman, a governor, a senator, or a general. Donald Trump is the first business person to become president, and therefore really the first outsider. Also the first candidate for president to be elected without spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on broadcast television. While Jeb Bush and John Kasich combined were spending about $800 million in negative TV ads, Donald Trump never spent any money responding to them, but he counterpunched in public, which was far more interesting. So all the rules are off. And as you know, historically, the last president to be elected president, not get reelected in a disputed election, and come back to win again was Grover Cleveland, kind of the last of the great conservative Democrats. And he was a New Yorker like Donald Trump. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. Roger, Timothy and I, we wanted to talk to you about Republican Representative Mike Gallagher, of course, representing the 8th Congressional District of Wisconsin. Yes. We touched on this last time, but we're looking a little bit further at it. And Gallagher seems to be joining the ranks of 14 other House Republicans who have also announced they will not seek re-election heading into 2024. To include some noteworthy names from states like Arizona, Texas, Ohio, Georgia, Colorado. What do you think's going on here?
I wrote about this. I had several shows at the Stone Zone highlighting this. I also posted at Stone Zone a number of stories on it. Look, I think there's an insidious plot right now to get enough Republicans to vacate their seats between now and November to flip control to the Democrats. They would immediately make Hakeem Jeffries the speaker. Then they would immediately consider the legislation by the most odious member of Congress, a man who, when it comes to sliminess, may be pulling ahead of Adam Schiff and Dan, whatever his name is, Goldman from New York. And that would be Jamie Raskin. The Supreme Court, when they ruled that the states did not have the power to bar Trump from the ballot, they also ruled that the Congress does. So they would move that immediately. It would go to the Senate, where you presume it would pass 51-49, and Trump would be barred from this election. Now, for our listeners out there who say, surely the Supreme Court would never allow this. Well, the Supreme Court already said in the Colorado decision that the Congress had this power. So it would be checkmate. That's why I think you have a willful effort to buy off individual members of Congress to vacate their seats between now and November. Gallagher could have resigned in such a way that there would have been a special election to fill his seat, and it would have been won by a Republican. Instead, he announced his resignation, but did not formally resign until he knew that deadline for a special election had passed. That's a guy who was trying to bring down the number of total members of the House. And when you have vacancies, as we do, now you have there are three elections in May and June that are special elections that should be won by Republicans, including Kevin McCarthy's seat. And that would give us a margin of four is one special election between now and the end of June. It may have already taken place, actually, that picks up one Democrat. This is something that has to be watched. I believe Kevin McCarthy himself is orchestrating this effort, I believe, and have documented the common thread that all of those who have resigned or who are stepping down, and those who may do so, which you analyze by looking at, have they endorsed Trump? How old are they? What's their district like? Have they been challenged in recent primaries with any serious challenge? I've identified 12 rhinos who may be the next ones over the side, including, get ready for it, Mike Pence's brother.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk that he was going to resign. And just to highlight what you were saying about Gallagher, if he had left office Monday, there could have been a special election. He made sure that he wasn't leaving office until tomorrow. And Roger, as a former Massachusetts resident...
I had read, by the way, that he was going to work for Palantir. Palantir is, of course, the technology that the government uses to spy on us. It is surveillance technology. That's where their big success has been.
And almost to rub our noses in it, tomorrow is the anniversary of the Battle of Lexington and Concord. So he's putting out that he's some sort of patriot for doing this. And it's just disgusting. The person that really surprised me, though, was Matt Rosendale from Montana. He has been pretty solid in the media and in his votes. I didn't know why he was resigning.
I'm going to confess that I didn't follow the Montana situation very closely. I do think, however, that John Tester, it may be the most vulnerable Democrat, and whoever we elected to that seat was going to be better than him.
Well, right. But Rosendale is the representative. Tester, I think, is definitely going to lose his Senate seat.
Well, I believe that Rosendale thought about this race, elected not to do it. I think the president has endorsed another candidate. His name escapes my mind at this point. But I think that's a seat that we can win.
You know, you mentioned perhaps people being bought off, and I was going to ask you what that looks like, but I think you may have just answered that question with one example: potential jobs in big tech companies that are associated with, government intelligence and spying and stuff like that. We've seen a lot of that. I track a lot of former NSA, FBI, CIA, DHS, all these people working at Facebook and Google. I mean, there's hundreds of them. I think there's 149 at Facebook. What else do you think is going on in the background to sort of incentivize this behavior aside from job opportunities?
I think it's mostly money. If you look at the commonality here, Paul Singer, the vulture capitalist neocon, is essentially the guy who initially financed the first cut of the Steele dossier. He gave millions of dollars to Ron DeSantis in his efforts to take down Donald Trump. He gave millions of dollars against Trump. He is a tremendous financier of politics that we don't agree with. So I think he's a globalist. He is, the common thread here is that everything he has financed every one of these members who's resigned or is under suspicion of being ready to resign has a maximum contribution or some other tie to him. He seems to be the common thread. Gave a huge amount of money to Nikki Haley. That was the other point. So he gave multi-millions to Nikki Haley. So I think he has identified who he is, you know.
And what still astounds me are all these butthurt, never-Trumper, pearl-clutching Republicocks that still insist that Donald Trump isn't presidential, and yet they think Joe Biden is somehow dignified and a statesman. And these are people that call themselves Republicans, Roger. I just can't figure out what planet they're living on.
I mean, first of all, I just see the decline in Joe Biden just looking at videos today. I mean, this guy, there's literally nobody home. I mean, he's wandering around. So clearly, if he's not medicated, he can't perform at all. And when he's not medicated, he seems to be near catatonic. He seems confused. He seems feeble. He seems he can't seem to understand, you know, which way to walk. It's really, it's embarrassing, actually. It's extraordinarily embarrassing. I'm beginning to feel sorry for him because this is elder abuse. Other times he's a little more lucid, but that's when I think they have him on Adderall or some other medication. But the president's right. If you watch him for a long period of time, the impact of whatever they're giving him wears off and he starts to get less and less lucid and less understandable.
Well, you're absolutely right on target, as you usually are. We've got a couple minutes left. Want to encourage people to go to stonezone.com on the regular, subscribe. There's a great amount of content there. Roger, anything you'd like to leave us with? We've got about a minute left.
Yeah, this watching the Trump trial in New York is quite deja vu, not over, all over again. My case was clearly a template. He is gagged. I was gagged. I moved for the judge's recuse. He moved the judge recuse himself. She refused. I moved the judge on the basis of presidential comments, recuse herself. She refused. Activist Democrats, people who were attacking Donald Trump on social media, on the jury, saying now suddenly, oh, yes, I can be objective. Look at where they get their media, CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times. I didn't see a single person say I read The New York Post. I didn't see a single juror say that I read, you know, Breitbart News. I mean, it is an activist, Democrat, left-wing jury. And it's the same thing I saw in my trial. Do you dislike Donald Trump? Yes, I think he's terrible. Okay, but I can be objective about him. It's ludicrous. So the same kind of gagging and lynching that I was subjected to, that is what they seek to do to our president. It's the same rigged trial.
It does certainly seem to be a rigged trial. Hopefully, like your trial, at the end, justice will prevail. Roger Stone, can't thank you enough for joining us again on State of the Nation. We look forward to your next visit. We look forward to you staying with us for more State of the Nation after top of the hour news right here on today's News Talk, TNT.